Lutheran Public Radio is now a nonprofit organization. That means all past, present, and future gifts to LPR are tax deductible. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate by check, make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio, and mail it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a tax-deductible gift online, issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support.
There's one reason that I'm standing up on this stage today. That's because of my Lord up above. I got to say thanks to Jesus. You knew I was going to do it, but I got to do it.
Churches can show the Super Bowl on big screen TVs this coming Sunday without fear of violating copyright laws.
Family Planning Services reduced cost. Contraception will reduce cost to the state and to the federal government.
So no apologies for that.
No apologies, no.
We need you to feed the good wolf within you, to listen to the better angels of your nature, and by your example, encourage us to do the same. Mr. President, tag, you're it.
We hear a lot about the sexual revolution. I mean, it was hardly a revolution. It was, in many ways, a de-evolution. What was intended to be overturned was, in some sense, in American society, destroyed, perhaps once and for all. Many feared that the connection between sex and marriage, the place of marriage within our civilization, as short-lived as the American civilization is, signaled something for the greater civilization, Western civilization. And the jury's still out. I'm not sure whether or not a corner has been turned and we've passed a point of no return. But I know how bad it looks. People look at things like having babies as something one can do in marriage, out of marriage, before marriage, after divorce, with a husband, without a husband. When did the connection between sex, procreation, and monogamous marriage, when did that connection start to disintegrate? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We begin this first half of our hour talking with Dr. Alan Carlson about sex and the decline of Western civilization. Then, a little bit later in the program, we'll conclude our series on biblical examples of preaching with Dr. Carl Fakencher today. Peter's sermon after healing the lame man, that's coming up in about a half hour here on Issues Etc. Dr. Alan Carlson is president of the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society based in Rockford, Illinois. He's visiting professor of political science at Hillsdale College, author of an article in the latest issue of Touchstone magazine titled Meaningful Intercourse, The Rise and Fall of the Sexual Constitution of Christian Civilization. Dr. Carlson, welcome back.
Pleased to be with you again.
It's pretty clear that people don't see the connection between procreation and monogamous marriage anymore, but that used to be self-evident. Why isn't it self-evident anymore?
Well, you're right. As late as the 1930s, even a critic of Christianity such as Sigmund Freud would still write in his book on civilization and its discontents that Western civilization insisted on a close bond between sexuality and procreation and marriage, that all three were tied together. Now, he objected to that, but it was still there, and he saw it. When did it disappear? We really can trace it back to that decade when so many good things started to disappear, the 1960s. In the United States, two key changes were taking place at that time. One, the court case Griswold versus Connecticut, which overturned a very strict law in Connecticut that prohibited the use of contraceptives. And, like most Protestants at the time applauded that, saying, hey, this is good, it's not abortion, so on and so on. The language of the court said that we're doing this because we're protecting the sacred rights of marriage and a couple, the intimacy of a couple should be protected. But in truth, in retrospect, we can see that that legal case meant the a decision for the first time in the American West that married couples now had a right not to procreate in marriage. And it fundamentally changed the basis of the law.
We used to be able to speak of marriage, or at least assume that a marriage could be understood as having a primarily procreative end, a primarily procreative function, not only for individuals, but for society as well. And yet you cite even the likes of Antonin Scalia, Associate Justice on the Supreme Court, where it's not altogether clear that marriage is viewed as a primarily procreative institution.
No, we've allowed marriage to be changed into a relationship mainly between two people for friendship and intimacy, where children are now an option. And it's perfectly legitimate now to enter, both culturally and legally, to enter a marriage with the intent of not having children, simply of enjoying each other's company, sharing a life, and sharing sexual life together, but without the intent of having children. And once that has become normative, and I think it largely is today, we've lost touch with the roots of our civilization. From the very beginning, the Christian movement, the young Christian movement taking form in the late Roman Empire, had to deal with this problem and resolved that the primary purpose and the focus of marriage would be procreation. We've abandoned that now.
When was the bond between procreation and monogamous marriage, when was it forged? How far back do we have to go, Dr. Carlson?
Well, the first and second centuries, the church fathers, and in this case, as I had in the article, the usually unnoticed church mothers, had to carve out answers to certain questions. First of all, the Roman Empire was going through a period of sexual anarchy and disorder. Abortion, infanticide, slave concubines, adultery, even the so-called Greek disease of man-boy relations. These were all widespread in the Roman Empire and growing. Meanwhile, the young Christian church faced the infiltration of the Gnostic movement. Heretics who shared at least, well, they had a melange of ideas, many different ideas. They all shared two ideas. One, that procreation was awful, was evil, and two, they hated marriage. And we know both from the reports they find in the epistles, numerous references to the danger they posed, but also looking at the historical record, that the church leaders had to carve something in reaction. And they did turn to, finally, this resolution that we Christians either marry in order to have children, or we remain continent. We abstain from sexuality. And that became the Christian standard. You could see it as early as the second century, clearly written. St. Augustine, in the year 400 AD, wrote a book entitled The Goods of Marriage, where he essentially codified the Christian view. The purposes of marriage were threefold: procreation, the fidelity between the couple, and a permanent union, till death do they part.
So what role, as we see this kind of grow up together, Western civilization and this, at the time, inseparable bond, at least for Christian thinkers and for other thinkers as well, what role did marriage, monogamous marriage, play in the formation and the continuation of Western civilization?
Well, again, I think it's its very fundamental foundation. We know, for example, that one of the reasons, or at least there's a pretty good evidence, a good theory, Rodney Stark's book on the early Christian church, makes the argument that the reasons that Christians succeeded and the Romans, in a sense, disappeared was because the Christians took better care of their children. They had more children. They did not expose them. They did not abort them. And they raised them more successfully than the pagans around them. And it wasn't so much that the Christians converted the pagan Romans, they just sort of outbred them, put it crudely, I guess. And that was the demographic reason why the Christian West, in a sense, emerged. Better child-rearing practices and so on. What we're seeing today in the post-procreation phase of marriage, which is much further advanced in Europe than it is here, is extremely small families, if they form at all, widespread cohabitation, depopulation. We are now, in fact, when I say we, descendants of Western civilization have become the pagan Romans, and we're dying out.
Become the pagan Romans maybe my historical perspective is too short-sighted, but in the course of three decades, we've gone from being, at least in our public persona, the American civilization, one where marriage was in law and in taboo and more strongly upheld, to one in which it's largely viewed as superfluous or optional at the best. And we've become the pagan Romans in a very short amount of time.
We have indeed. Obviously, there were some conditions in place which made the spread easier in our time, you know, more rapid communication lines, the mass media, the whole aspect of modernity sort of naturally accelerates shifts in ideas. What used to take maybe 50 or 100 years can take place in a year or two now. But with that said, you're right. We have this dramatic change, and to be honest, most Christians just sort of sat there watching while it happened. I mentioned the issue of contraception. Most, you know, the Roman Catholic Church officially opposed that change, but even the Roman Catholic laity, just like Protestants, pretty well accepted it. It's just, well, that's good. We've got a new freedom now.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, you said earlier in our conversation that Protestants heralded the notion in some ways of contraception because, of course, it wasn't abortion. That's in contrast with the earlier held views of the Protestant Reformation. When we come back, we'll talk about how American Christianity has in many ways contributed to the fall of Western civilization, the decline of Western civilization, at least in its connection to sex and marriage. Stay tuned. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January is full of resources to help you and your congregation observe the season of Lent. It's titled, O Sacred Head Now Wounded. It contains devotions, Bible studies, sermons, children's messages, and bulletins for the Lenten season. You can purchase O Sacred Head Now Wounded by calling Concordia Publishing House, 800-325-3040, or click the CPH logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org. Sacred Head Now Wounded.
Thanks so much for sending your email. Now, I've produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, and I can tell you we've never received email response like this. But we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7, 618-223-8384, 618-223-8384. The Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Will your church be one of the Issues Etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues Etc. 300, click the Sponsors section of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues Etc. 300.
Depression, the Silent Epidemic, is the title of a seminar Tuesday evening, February the 10th, at the Wisconsin Room at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Beverly Yonke is the presenter. Learn how to spot signs of depression in yourself and how to help others who are suffering, deeply hurting, or depressed. Find out more about Depression, the Silent Epidemic, at www.lmcusc.org or by calling 414-332-5732.
Love and marriage, love and marriage. It's an institute you can't disparage. Ask the local.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. 10 more minutes with Dr. Alan Carlson of the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society based in Rockford, Illinois. He's authored an article in the latest issue of Touchstone Magazine titled Meaningful Intercourse, The Rise and Fall of the Sexual Constitution of Western Civilization. A little bit later, about 10 minutes from now, Dr. Carl Fikencher will join us to conclude our series on biblical examples of preaching today, Peter preaching after the healing of the lame man. Dr. Carlson, how have Christians, you mentioned before the break that the Roman Catholic laity largely ignored the rise of contraception, even though their church officialdom stood against it. How have other Christians in the United States in some way either wittingly or unwittingly contributed to the problem we're discussing?
Well, let me just take that back a few decades. Back in the 1870s, a man named Anthony Comstock, who was actually working for the Young Men's Christian Association, back then a very strong evangelical Protestant ministry, succeeded in seeing passed throughout the United States and at the federal level strong laws prohibiting the possession and distribution of contraceptive and contraceptive information, both through the U.S. mails and in other ways as well. And that, again, reflected historic Christian and including Protestant Christian views. Martin Luther was, for example, strongly against to contraception. In some ways, even more strongly than the Catholic Church of his time. But what happened? The retreat really began officially in 1930 when the Anglicans, the Episcopalians, at their Lambeth Conference in England, guardedly accepted contraception within marriage. This was after, for decades, they'd been debating this and had always rejected that, but they finally sort of caved in. The Federal Council of Churches in the United States a year later produced a report which recommended essentially the same thing, and that was the more of the mainline Protestant churches, the Methodists, Presbyterians, although it included the United Lutherans at the time. So we started to see acceptance in the 30s and 40s. By the 50s, most evangelicals and even the conservative churches were either not talking about it or were starting to accept it. And it was really marked in the early 1960s and mid-60s Christianity Today, the Billy Graham's evangelical journal, finally accepted birth control as acceptable, distinguished it from abortion and said it was a different issue, but it was okay for Christians to use birth control, including the newly introduced birth control pill.
So I'm wondering, does this really goes a long way toward explaining why, as our conversation began, why people don't see a self-evident connection between procreation and monogamous marriage. Even Christians don't see it anymore.
They really don't. I mean, some do. I won't say, but most don't, because we've taken the easy path. And to be honest, the historic Christian path required, I guess you'd say, a certain amount of stamina, a certain amount of strength of character in order to be willing to do it. For example, another component of the old system was that Christians, like other defenders of the this order, also discouraged illegitimacy. They thought they used the term illegitimate birth to define characterize a child born out of wedlock. And that was seen a culture's way of sending signals to young couples that they should marry if they're going to have sex. Because if they produce a child, they'll hurt the child's life chances. Well, we're a settlement a lot these days, and we don't have the stomach to use those kinds of labels anymore. So we've eliminated the legal categories of illegitimacy, and even out-of-wedlock birth is disappearing. And so the consequence is an explosion in the number of births out of wedlock. It's now close to 40% in the United States. And why? To some considerable degree, because we no longer have the ability to criticize that. So a lot of children are being hurt, because we do know that a child born out of wedlock, even to a couple cohabiting, is going to face a whole lot more problems than a child born within marriage. But again, we're too sentimental now, and we've lost any strength of even theological certainty, and we've lost even the strength of character to make hard choices and follow difficult paths.
You have written, in America, it now seems clear that the right of privacy conceived by the Supreme Court 43 years ago is the foe of both Christian marriage and procreation separately and is especially hostile when they are united. What do you mean by this?
Well, the most recent examples, the right of privacy was extended in the Lawrence case, 2003, to create a right to sodomy. The issue had to do with consensual sex by homosexuals. And the Supreme Court used the right of privacy, which earlier had been used to eliminate laws against contraception and then laws against abortion, and then had been used to eliminate any right a father, even a married father, might have to protect his child in utero. Now it was finally being extended to also protect intentionally non-procreative homosexual sex. So we've pretty well gone the whole way. Sex is no longer related to marriage. It's no longer related to children. It's just a form of pleasure. And the law has been changed mostly through court order, I will grant, mostly through court order, although the contraception issue that was changing before the court ruled as well. It's changed because, again, Christians in particular have lost the ability and the will to defend the old sexual constitution of the West.
Two final questions. How would you respond to someone who says, look, this is all fine and good, but it's really just amounts to Christians whining because now they're culturally on the outs. They enjoyed the umbrella of Western civilization for a long time. Civilization's moved on without them. And this, you know, society is going to reshape itself and be just fine. It's just that Christians are whining that they're no longer exercising the same kind of influence with their morality.
Well, first of all, I think it's missing the problem. Society is not going to be just fine. Society is rapidly dissolving and disintegrating around us. We've not only lost the ability to restrain our passions and our sexual drives. We've lost the ability even to restrain our expenditures. The country is rapidly moving towards a kind of bankruptcy. And I don't think it's wrong to equate the two things. Again, I think we have lost the ability to say no. We've lost the ability to say, as a culture, to say, to urge self-control over just lavish self-expression and doing whatever you want. And we almost have lost the moral language, which really defined our civilization and made it constructive and creative. The end result is going to be a lot of hurt people. The end of what we've called Western civilization. Something else will emerge, you're right. Perhaps Christians will, a smaller group of Christians will renew the Christian worldview and will renew the Christian understanding of these things. It's probably smart in small communities, but perhaps just as in the old Roman times, perhaps this renewed Christian recognition will in the end triumph simply because it respects and reflects a greater care and concern for children.
With only 1 minute, if what you've just said is true and possible, will Christianity have to view its future as one perhaps without Western civilization?
Oh, I think that's true. I think, in fact, yeah, Christian culture does not serve Western civilization. I think we're going to become countercultural in a much more meaningful way than has been true in the past. And forget about Western civilization. It will. When I say that, I mean forget about the sort of huge ponderous thing we think about. What we do need to do is focus upon is certain core gospel truths and certain truths that the founders of Christianity, I think, understood very clearly.
Dr. Alan Carlson is president of the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society based in Rockford, Illinois. He's visiting professor of political science at Hillsdale College, author of an article in the latest issue of Touchstone magazine titled Meaningful Intercourse, The Rise and Fall of the Sexual Constitution of Western Civilization. You'll find a link to Dr. Alan Carlson and the Howard Center under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Dr. Carlson, thank you again.
I've enjoyed being with you.
I think he's right. Forget Western civilization. Now, it may have been there as a prop, perhaps one that we took for granted and one that we leaned too heavily upon as Christians, especially in early American days. Western civilization will go the way that all civilizations go eventually. I think they all rise and fall for various reasons. Christianity does not rise and fall with Western civilization. Christendom is an entirely different thing. A kingdoms rise, kingdoms fall. Thrones are set up, they're taken down. But Christianity is built upon the foundation of the apostles and the prophets, the chief cornerstone being Jesus Christ himself. So if Western civilization is sliding down the hill, then we simply watch it go. Sadly, farewell. We continue to teach and preach what it is Christ has delivered to us through his church, and the church remains.
Time just stood still for one boy, one girl.